This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Some of the people camped out in Occupy Wall Street all over the country have nowhere else to go. As reported by Associated Press, Occupy encampments from Portland, Oregon, through L.A. to Atlanta are finding homeless people moving into tent cities set up by protesters. Some Occupy sites are finding bylaws written to send away the homeless are being used to prevent constitutional rights of freedom of assembly and expression. Polls show millions of Americans are just one paycheck away from losing their homes. Many more are already in foreclosure, being evicted, or already out on the street. Lots of us worry, could I be next? Could you handle it? The way things are now, maybe the rights of the homeless will matter to you down the line. Radio EcoShock is going to take you on a quick tour of homelessness in North America. We'll visit New York City, where 36,000 school children have no home. San Francisco, where it is illegal to sit or lie on a sidewalk. Even in the capital, in Washington, D.C., we'll find the homeless next to the limousines and lobbyists. In Canada, there is a little progress in Vancouver, with street sleepers reduced by 80%, but are they just being hidden away?
I got an idea about homelessness. You know what they ought to do? Change the name of it. Change the name of it. It's not homelessness. It's houselessness. It's houses these people need. A home is an abstract idea. A home is a setting. It's a state of mind. These people need houses. Physical, tangible structures. They need low-cost housing. But where are you going to put it? Well, that's fine, but where are you going to put it? Where are you going to put it? Nobody wants you to build low-cost housing near their house. People don't want it near them. We got something in this country you've heard of. It's called NIMBY. N-I-M-B-Y. Not in my backyard.
There are somewhere between 600,000 and a million homeless people in America. The wild thing is, America is flooded with empty houses. 1 in 10 homes in the United States is vacant. That's about 18 million homes. If we guesstimate, there are as many as 500,000 families needing a home. There are 18 empty homes for every one of them. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, all housing was owned by the government. As Dmitry Orlov has told us on Radio EcoShock, people just stayed where they were, so there was no wave of homelessness in Russia or its member states during those harsh economic times. But America is stuck. Houses sit empty, sometimes the banks even tear them down, but people, many of them families with young children, keep getting foreclosed, evicted, kicked out onto the street, and nobody wants them. Apparently capitalism just can't handle degrowth. As winter approaches and the economy heads into the dumpster, homelessness is growing in New York City. The nasty surprise is that both the state and city appear to be slashing help for the homeless in their hour of greatest need. Radio EcoShock visits the Big Apple with Giselle Routhier, policy analyst for the NYC Coalition for the Homeless. We'll talk with Jennifer Freidenbach, executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Why has this formerly welcoming city gone into a media orgy of bashing the poor? We'll go to Washington, D.C. to speak with Michael Farrell, executive director of the district's Coalition for the Homeless, to see what is going on there. Our last stop is Vancouver, Canada, with famous anti-poverty activist Gene Swanson of the Carnegie Community Action Project and author of the book Poor Bashing, The Politics of Exclusion. This ain't no social cause. Homelessness in a land of wealth is a national disgrace. In San Francisco, we learn the city has stopped counting the number of homeless people found dead on the streets every year. The average is at least 100 dead in just one city. An estimated 37,000 homeless Americans die every year. That is more than in any foreign war. About 155 of them are murdered, some as hate crimes for the fun of it or out of a desire to kill someone vulnerable. You won't see this on TV, but there is a National Homeless Persons Memorial Day on December 21st, 2011, to remember those victims of a system that just didn't care. World Homeless Day this year was on October 10th. Remember that? All the news specials and the coverage? I didn't think so. Let's take a tour of the tragedy of homelessness in North America. Homeless. Radio EcoShock visits the Big Apple with Giselle Routhier, policy analyst for the NYC Coalition for the Homeless. Hello, Giselle.
Hello.
Last spring, your organization released a State of the Homeless 2011 report. What did you find?
Well, what we found is that over the past year, in 2010, homelessness in New York City reached record levels. Throughout the year in 2010, over 113,500 men, women, and children slept in New York City shelters, and that includes 42,000 children. And that was the highest level recorded within a year-long period. And then what we also saw was that the average nightly census numbers among homeless folks in shelter also reached record highs in the past year as well. So in February, we saw that there were over 39,000 men, women, and children in shelters on a single night. So that's what we've been seeing over the past year. That's what we documented in our report. It has a lot to do with both the economy, but a little bit more to do with the policies of this mayoral administration and what's being done to assist the homeless.
Well, let's be clear. Absolute records are being set in total homeless people in New York, the number of homeless families and kids and more. But I did a Google search for recent news about the plight of these citizens of New York in the last month, and it showed practically nothing. Are the homeless being hidden?
I think it's more of a hidden problem, I would say, specific to New York as well. In New York City, we actually have a right to shelter. That exists in nowhere else in the country. So the majority of folks that are homeless in New York City are going to be in a shelter, which makes the problem much more hidden, even though it is still a huge problem. So you do see fewer people on the streets here in New York, although you see that as well. But because we have a right to shelter, the vast majority of people that are homeless are in shelters.
Well, Giselle, tell us more about the response to these record numbers. Let's start with the state of New York.
Well, it's more, I think I would say, more of a city kind of problem that we're seeing. Specifically starting, you know, in 2005, we've seen these numbers go up. So before the economy even tanked, we started seeing the numbers of homeless families, homeless men and women going up. And that's directly related to some of the policy changes that they made on a city level. So in 2005, Mayor Bloomberg decided to cut off homeless families and individuals from gaining access to federal housing resources. So what I mean by federal housing resources are Section 8 vouchers, public housing, so the type of permanent housing that's funded by the federal government. So prior to that, homeless families would get a priority on the top of the long waiting list for those resources and be able to access a certain portion of Section 8 vouchers and public housing. So in 2005, the mayor stopped that, and since then, virtually no homeless families have gotten access to those resources. And what he did instead was institute these time-limited city-funded subsidies. So they've gone through several different iterations, but the latest one was called Advantage. It was time-limited to 2 years. And what we've seen since that program was put into effect was that yes, it would help families move out, but there are more and more families coming back into the shelter system after their 2 years runs out. So what we've seen since 2005 is a huge increase in the number of families that are experiencing a repeat episode of homelessness, so coming back into the system after exiting for a brief period of time. And so that has fed significantly to the numbers that naturally went up when the economy tanked. So that sort of compounded that problem, and now we have record numbers. And at the beginning of this year, the mayor ended the time-limited subsidies as well. So we have now, for the first time ever, no program in place to help families move out of shelter, whether permanent housing or temporary. And it's causing massive problems, and we're still not quite seeing, you know, what the effect of that might be, because it was just earlier this year that they families got cut off from all subsidies. So I think what we're going to be seeing in the coming months, especially fall and winter, when we sometimes see a rise in homelessness, is that it's just going to be astronomical.
Giselle, let's talk about homeless kids in New York City classrooms. The New York City Department of Homeless Services reported 8,000 school-aged children have no home, but the federal government said it was more like 40,000 kids. What's going on there?
That's right. There is a broader, the federal government uses a broader definition of homelessness. So what the city is measuring is specifically children that are in homeless shelters. The federal government uses a broader definition, so that would include people who are in homeless shelters or families that are living in doubled-up situations or with other family members, or don't have a nightly place to go that's the same, that's consistent. So it's a broader definition that the federal government uses, so it does capture more students that are living in situations that are not permanent or unstable.
So if these kids are going back to shelters, there is a right to shelter. Are they getting a chance to shower? Do they have a place to do their homework? Is it going to work for them?
I mean, there's a place to shower, but it does disrupt children's lives. I mean, the research has consistently shown over the past several decades that homeless kids face a lot of barriers in schooling and will most of the time be underachieving in school compared to other poor children that are housed. And that's because of, you know, a lot of different things. They're seeing instability in their lives. It's difficult to find a place, like you said, to do their homework that's quiet, that's not around a lot of other people. They've been uprooted. They're facing a lot of times emotional distress or behavioral problems, and a lot of these things compound into directly causing an underachievement in school or seeing a decline in their achievement in school. So that is definitely an issue. I mean, we've also seen in studies that as soon as a family is rehoused and permanent, then a student can rebound very well. But while they're homeless, that added stress from what they're experiencing is very real.
Rocker Cindy Lauper has recently thrown the spotlight on the number of lesbian, gay, and transgender youth on the streets of New York. Some of them were kicked out by their parents and now live in a risky environment. Are you seeing this problem?
That's definitely a problem in New York City, and it's a very specific population, and it's tough, too, because New York City does have a right to shelter, but this is a population that by nature is sometimes tough to serve or will feel unsafe in a larger city shelter with men and women of all different ages and different sexual orientations. And so a lot of times kids that are running away from home and facing a myriad of other problems will prefer to stay on the streets than going into the shelter. And so there are some specialized shelter and services for those kids, but not enough to meet the need. So that is a big issue in terms of getting specific services to really address needs of younger homeless kids and homeless LGBT kids. And we don't see enough of that.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Giselle Routhier, policy analyst with the New York City Coalition for the Homeless. Giselle, I'd like to run through a rapid-fire checklist on the rights of the homeless in New York. Please try to give me fast answers if you can, even yes or no, if that works. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Is it legal in New York for a homeless person to sit on the sidewalk?
Yes, as long as they're not blocking traffic.
How about a homeless family? Can they sleep in a public place?
Again, it sort of depends. Public parks have curfews, so that would generally be a no, but we've encountered families who've slept in laundromats or in restaurants or other places, so people tend to get interesting when they need to find a place to sleep outside.
Is there anywhere in greater New York area where homeless people can legally pitch a tent to live in?
I'm actually unaware of that. I really don't know what that would be. Like I said, you know, if it was in the New York City five boroughs, you know, the only place I could think of that they would do that would be in a park, but in public parks there are curfews or the parks close at midnight, so I don't see how that would really happen. As far as outside of New York City, I can't say.
Okay. Is it legal to sleep in a car or camper in New York?
Yeah.
Does New York have public washrooms accessible to the homeless?
Again, folks that are living on the streets will get creative in terms of finding what they need, but there are public restrooms throughout the city.
Good. Do we know how many homeless New Yorkers are found dead on the streets each winter?
I do not have that information. No, I do not know.
Okay. Can a homeless person vote in state elections?
Yes, of course.
Can the homeless vote in city elections?
Yes, of course.
And my final one, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the New York City police if 10 is where the officers protect the homeless and 1 is where the homeless are generally harassed or beaten by the police? Your rating of the police?
I would say it's on the lower end. You know, for the most part, the police will try to move homeless folks along. But in a lot of circumstances, they'll leave them alone if they're not causing any trouble. So it's, you know, maybe 50-50.
Okay, let's go for longer talk here. First, the New York Times reports 1 in 5 New Yorkers are living below the poverty line. Other news reports show the general welfare rate in New York City has fallen by 4%, but welfare numbers are skyrocketing in surrounding areas like Long Island. Giselle, has there been an assessment of how many people are homeless because we don't treat their mental health or medical problems? Do we have any idea how that stands?
The data on that is pretty hard to measure. I mean, one thing we do know is that the rates of mental illness among homeless single adults are higher than among the general population. And we also know that among those that sleep on the streets, the rates of mental illness are higher than those that are in the shelter system. But it's hard to say. I don't think there's been any way to accurately measure what leads or in how many instances the reason they're homeless is because of their mental illness or other disability.
And the New York Coalition for the Homeless is one of the oldest such institutions in the country. Giselle Ruthier, what are your organization priorities for the coming winter of discomfort for those 100,000 and more New Yorkers who will need services this winter?
Our biggest priority this winter is really advocating that the city put in place some type of program to give a solution to folks that are in shelters. So our biggest priority is to get the city to reinstate priority for federal housing resources for homeless families and individuals. So that's the biggest thing. I mean, it won't cost the city anything, and it will provide immediate housing resources to homeless families and individuals who at the moment have none. So that's been our biggest focus. I mean, aside from that, we do also, you know, keep track of the amount of shelter capacity that the city has and make sure they have enough to meet the need. But what we'd rather see is actually folks moving out into permanent housing. And that's something that there is a complete lack of a plan right now. So that's what we're going to be focusing on.
Giselle, can you give us your website address and maybe tell us how we can help?
Absolutely. Our website is www.coalitionforthehomeless.org. And there's a lot of information on our website about what's happening in New York City with the homeless population. There's statistics, there's a take action page to write to the mayor and write to the city and about what they can do to improve the situation. So I would encourage anybody to really check that out.
Obviously, we've just touched the surface in a deep problem in the financial capital of the world. Our guest is Giselle Ruthier from the New York Coalition for the Homeless. Thank you, Giselle.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock. We continue our survey of homelessness in major cities. Jennifer Friedenbach is the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition for Homelessness. Jennifer, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think there is a connection between the Occupy San Francisco movement and the plight of the homeless?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, a lot of the folks that are involved in Occupy San Francisco are without housing themselves. And I think that a lot of folks are protesting what has happened to the financial industry and what the financial industry has done to the economy of the United States. And so folks have lost their housing, folks are out of work, folks are really struggling, and they don't see the response they'd like to see. And a lot of things go back to the financial industry's fault.
Right. The homeowners didn't get bailed out. They just got the dirty end of the stick.
Right, exactly. And in fact, interestingly enough, the same sector also funded laws in San Francisco that made it illegal to sit and lie on San Francisco sidewalks. They funded those campaigns. The last campaign, about 70% of the funding came from the financial sector. We also have the financial sector in places like Wells Fargo funding the creation of private prisons in the United States. We also have a lot of price gouging going on for people who are just regular customers of banks that's hurting people economically. And there's just a lot of stuff going on. We have the cities are in a situation where they're making cuts to social programs that impacts homeless people and other low-income people. And oftentimes the localities are making cuts because their pension funds are losing money, or alternatively, usually both, they got really bad loans from the financial industry for bonds that were issued. And so there's a lot of push to try to renegotiate those bonds so that then the city can save money and stave off cuts to social services. So it's all very much connected.
It's one big circle. And could you explain for us this sit-lie-buy law? How did it come about, and what does it really mean for people who have no home?
Well, you know, really, from our perspective, it was put on the ballot. There's in San Francisco, like a lot of big American cities, homelessness is used as political football for folks who are running for office. And it's also used locally as a wedge issue on the ballot to try to drive more conservative voters to the poll and impact elections. And we believe that's why Sitlai was put on the ballot, was one of our districts that could have gone either way, liberal or conservative, and was up for reelection. and we've always believed that that's why it was put on the ballot. It basically means 30 days in jail on the second offense for anyone sitting or lying on sidewalks in San Francisco, and it doesn't require a witness, and it does not require, of course, a crime to be committed. So from a civil rights perspective, it's a very problematic law. Interestingly enough, there's been talk of using it against the protesters, and the chief of police decided actually that they were not going to use it against the protesters, that they're going to selectively enforce the law. So in other words, they're using it against people who they deem to be sitting or lying on the sidewalk because they're too poor to afford a place to live and they would be in violation versus people who are there because they're in protest. So it's pretty problematic from a civil rights perspective.
Is that 24/7 or are there certain hours where you can't just sit down?
It's time specific. And so there's other laws. There's actually 33 laws that are on the books that target poor people. And some of them are state laws and some of them are local laws. But yeah, that was our sit-lie law was number 33.
Are there more homeless people in the Bay Area as the economy fails to recover?
There is, absolutely. We have in San Francisco, we have the highest wait list for shelters for families that we've ever had. It reached a high point last week, in fact. And we have, you know, about half as many more single adults than before looking for housing. The interesting thing is about, in both the families and the folks who don't have kids, about 60% of them are homeless for the first time. So we have people who, you know, that are newly homeless that have never experienced this before. They're mostly all poor people. You know, I mean, this kind of idea that for folks who have access to accumulated wealth, they're likely not going to become homeless, and more likely it's going to be low-income working-class people who don't have access to accumulated wealth, who don't have families that, you know, have large houses that they can move into when times get tough.
Well, if this happens all of a sudden to somebody, and it can, you just suddenly come home and you're evicted, what is a person to do? What are the first steps that a person could take?
Well, I think the most important thing for folks is to try to stay in their housing, of course. It's much more difficult once you lose your housing. So to do that, there's oftentimes local programs that'll give rental assistance. And part of the Obama stimulus package, the first one around, was this program that does homeless prevention over a longer period of time. So let's say you're out of work for 9 months. They'll help you pay your rent during that time. There's programs that people should check with their municipal government, try to stay in housing. I think the other thing to do is to really reach out and be resourceful, you know, reach out to everyone you know and find out if folks can help you out. And I think that our culture has kind of isolated us from one another and this idea that we all kind of stand independently, but, you know, folks are willing to help and are happy to do it oftentimes. And so that's what folks should keep in mind as well. There may be local shelters, et cetera, that folks can access, but I think the more immediate thing is to stay in your housing. And if you can't stay in your housing, to be resourceful with your own network and reach out to families and friends about folks who can put you up.
And I guess if that doesn't work, your other resource is other homeless people who will tell you where you can get a meal and where you can get by.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in different localities, they have different resource lists and different systems on how to access shelter, et cetera. But, you know, a lot of that information can be available electronically on the web in most municipalities.
And you mentioned that families are having to wait to get into a shelter. How long are they having to wait? And it's hard for me to picture this. What does a single mother with three kids do while waiting for a shelter? Where are they living?
In San Francisco right now, it's about a 6 to 9 month wait. So what families are doing is, you know, they're moving from place to place. You know, they'll move in with for a few nights with some friends, maybe a few nights in a hotel, maybe a few nights with family, and just keep trying to put different things together, sometimes sleeping in their cars. So yeah, folks really, it's really destabilizing. Unfortunately, a lot of times the families end up splitting up. So maybe the kids go stay with someone and then the parents have to stay somewhere else. That's a pretty typical situation. Sometimes for single women, they have to make choices around, you know, stay in places that are not always very safe if they're a single mom. And that's a very uncomfortable, terrible decision that folks are faced with. So it's really traumatizing. It's a very, very difficult situation. And, of course, because, you know, human beings are, you know, we're not meant to live outdoors. We're meant to, you know, we really have this natural tendency towards home. And it's really incredibly traumatizing for people.
How many homeless school children are there in Frisco, and how are they coping?
We have close to 2,000, and so that would be school-aged registered in our public schools. I know that there's been some national numbers that the numbers are pretty staggering nationwide, and they really are going up and up because the school districts keep track of, you know, how many kids they have without housing in their district. So it's really a tough situation. And it's, you know, when we have families that are in this situation and then get housing, they talk so much about the difference it has made for their kids in terms of their ability to succeed at school and what the family relationships are like, and every part of the life just is totally transformed when they have safe and dignified housing to live in. So it really does impact kids in a lot of ways. You know, for really little kids, maybe, you know, there's a lot of kids don't reach their developmental milestones if they don't have a place to live. So, you know, you think about kids crawling at a certain age, you know, about 7 months to 9 months, and starting to walk at 1 year. And if you don't have a home and you're constantly in a stroller all day, every day, and you're moving around, those developmental milestones just don't get hit. And education, the same kind of impact. So kids really struggle with it. It's really very destabilizing for them.
Jennifer Friedenbach, local newspapers have run horror stories about panhandling in the city. What is your take?
You know, this is another one of those election things. We've been doing a ton of outreach. We've been talking to everybody that's involved in the panhandling, you know, panhandlers and street performers and all kinds of folks, and nobody has noted an increase in panhandling. So we kind of think of it as an election ploy. We see it. We have a mayoral election coming on right now. Typically, we would see an increase in panhandling with an economic downturn. We haven't found any evidence of that, you know, but that's the sign of poverty in any country, in any culture, place in the world. You're going to basically be able to see what level of poverty exists in a society by the numbers of panhandlers. It's a very common indicator. And so, you know, in San Francisco, we have a pretty high level of poverty. We have half of our school children in San Francisco are having free or reduced lunch, which means that they're living below the poverty line. And living below in the poverty line in San Francisco, which is a very expensive city to live in, both food and rent and other cost of living indicators, is a real struggle. So, you know, we have a very affluent city, but really we have two cities. We have extremely poor people and extremely affluent people.
Yeah, that's sort of what Occupy Wall Street is about, I think, for sure. How is San Francisco doing when it comes to providing supportive housing as a long-term solution for homeless people?
I think San Francisco's been pretty good in terms of really trying to ensure that a large amount of the general fund goes towards creating supportive housing. And that ends up, from a fiscal perspective, a very smart thing to do, because you save so much money in emergency costs and criminal justice costs and all these other kind of societal costs. So it's actually a lot less expensive for folks to be in housing than to be out on the streets for a municipality. So emergency room visits alone, because of what happens to somebody if they're living outside, colds turning into pneumonia, infections turning into loss of limbs. I mean, all these things, it really is very costly. So that we're pretty smart about it. We're nowhere near meeting the need. The homeless crisis, of course, was caused by the federal government's massive cuts, especially previous to 1983, and we reached our lowest point in 1983, and our first shelters opened up around the country. And since then, our homeless population has only grown because we really haven't invested in the housing that we had after the New Deal. And so that steady deterioration of housing, of affordable housing, has led to, and that and the growing disparity between wages and rents, has grown to this crisis that we're facing. So till the federal government really gets serious about solving the problems and making a commitment to the very basic human right of housing, localities are going to continue to struggle with this issue.
Radio EcoShock will be right back with more on the homeless in San Francisco, followed by reports from Washington and Vancouver. Stay tuned.